It's an interesting question to me because, so for instance, if we were in an Orthodox church, we wouldn't have this conversation at all. It would just be simply that the church is right and, you know, sorry if you don't feel that way, you know. And so I'm always, well, what is the balance? And one of the issues for me as a musician then is why is it always, because every church I've been in, it's been this way. So for instance, I was in one church where they said we're going to have a traditional service and we're going to have a contemporary service. And the pastors, what they said is, in the traditional service, we're going to wear a suit and tie. And in the contemporary service, we're going to wear a polo shirt, khaki pants, and sit on a stool. And that was their contribution. And then I had to go from, you know, with 20 minutes in between, go from, you know, choir and those kinds of things to a full praise band. And so it's, you know, the discussions always come back to music and music style. And maybe that's inevitable. But what is that balance? Can there be a right thing, for instance, communion every week, or liturgy, or a particular music style, that we just say, okay, this is the right thing, we are going to educate you in this, and you might not like it. Is it allowable for a church to do that? I mean, where is the balance of respecting who the members are and leading the members to a place?
You know, I think there's a difference between this church being founded partly out of the conviction that frequent communion is really, really important. I mean, I think that's not a negotiable at church and sermon. That's my guess. Music style. My mother sometimes will, you know, have this gut response to a hymn or a song or the noise. My mother doesn't like the praise music because it's too loud. It hurts. It's not the music itself. It's the amplifier. And I have to respect that, and I wish her pastor did a little more. You know, when it's painful to worship, there's a problem, right? And so sometimes I think conversations where we're really pushed to think, and I don't mean to over-intellectualize, but to say, what's in it for you if we sing this song instead of this song? Is it about the words? Is it about the rhythm? Is it about an association you have with a childhood, you know, memory? All of us have hymns that we want to sing because we remember this one time when we were 11, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe there's space for that. But so I think I really do think conversation about what part of this particular experience is significant for you. We sang a hymn today with sort of a rocky beat at the very beginning. I can't even think what it was anymore.
Lord be with you.
No. The second one.
Ode to Joy.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And that was pretty. I mean, I loved that. You know. Well, was anybody offended by that? That we tried to, you know, kind of.
We'll find out Monday morning. To
me, the words and the tune and the experience of that are important, and there's no reason that you can't alter the way it's presented a little bit. So I guess I would like to hear more conversations, not simply from this is where I stand and this is what moves me in and I'm not edging, but I'm a lot more likely, Darwin Glassford said this one time, I'm a lot more likely to want to hear your music if I can know why you love it, because then I can love it for those reasons too.
Good, I think we need to wrap up, so I'm going to do my final round of questions. Mike, you talked a little bit about your children, the ones that expect that they will be at COS and that those that don't. Whether they stay or leave, what do you think, what would you like them to retain from COS's worship?
I'd like them to feel that they're part of the corporate worship, that it's important that people are coming together. That's why I think communion is so important. You know, no matter where you are or your differences, you're all coming together. And I hope they feel a connectedness to the other people. And I hope they feel connectedness to God. Like they've really spoken their heart to God. They've made a connection. It's about a relationship, I think.
Karen, what would COS's worship look like if Calvin College didn't exist?
You gave us this question ahead, and I thought, and I don't know how to parse out. I mean, I think it would be a little smaller, and in many ways it would be very similar. I can't begin to guess how the history would be different. But let me reverse that question and say that without COS, Calvin College would be very different. Because honestly, without COS, there would be a lot of faculty members, myself included, who probably could not stay there. who could not find. This is an essential place for many of us.
Cindy, what could every CRC-born Calvin alum, founding member of COS, do to make the stranger feel more at home at COS?
Well, just what was our experience was just being open to people saying, you know, we're glad you're here. It doesn't matter that you were born and raised in the CRC. And what helped me was just learning about what the whole Reformed game is about. I mean, honestly, I really didn't know. And I don't know if Janice does that with the new members, but I did, there was a little class here right after we joined. It was helpful to me. It would be helpful to do it before you join, I think.
Knowing you're getting into.
Yeah. But we felt very welcomed, and we still do.
Joel, what one lesson does COS have yet to learn from the global church's worship?
That's a very tough question.
That's why I asked it.
we're doing, I think, a good job in exposing songs and worship. We might do a better job in explaining sometimes why certain songs are sung the way they are sung repetitively. When the immigrant population in COS flourishes a little bit more, meaning we can provide space for them to worship on their own in our facility, I think while we celebrate blended worship and diverse global worship in many ways, we still have not, I think, given them space to be fully their own culture. I felt a sense of dis-ease with that lady who led 2 weeks ago. And I felt that when she abruptly stopped, I could sense her discomfort because I knew she wanted to go on and on and on and on. But it's just not the culture of many here in COS. Maybe that's something we can continue to speak about.
Yeah, that's good. All right, Matt, hypothetically speaking, let's say you become ordained tomorrow and have a commission from COS to plant a church that creatively imparts COS's DNA. What would it look like?
The idea of the, it's kind of an emergent church idea of 24/7 church, household worship, taking, I've always been fascinated with, and this isn't a new idea, taking these liturgical traditions, these ancient ideas, these ancient traditions, and spreading them out more, I guess spreading them out into households, spreading them out into Bible studies. And so you could be reading from the church fathers, maybe even in your household, you could actually do a stripped down liturgical worship, some teze type things, just taking all these resources that we've brought into a once on Sunday morning kind of thing, and pushing it right back out into incorporating that in people's lives, and those traditions can infuse people's lives all week.
Could I add a little bit more? Part of global worship, I think, is, and this might be so much antithetical to the COS DNA, as you may want to put it, we're so tied to the printed word. Okay, much of global worship really does not use any printed word. I think we can retain our Reformed confessions and distinctives. It might be very uncomfortable if we moved away from the printed liturgy at one time, but maybe we can adopt it to the Vesper service, maybe. And then just have somebody lead it without it.
All right. I think that's all we have time for. Thank you very much, especially those who have been here for these 3 weeks and 3 people who have taken part. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike.